Good morning. Again, my name is Robert Parrow. I am a graduate student of Lincoln University in Jefferson City, Missouri. And this morning I'd like to present the annual fluctuations of carbon dioxide, methane, and nitrous oxide, including soil thermal properties from a secondary forest in central Missouri. This research is part of several studies that is ongoing at Lincoln University, where we're using several grad students to accomplish different missions. My focus this morning will be on the physical properties of the soil and how it affects greenhouse gas emissions. Why is this important? Well, greenhouse gases do fluctuate considerably from one landscape to another. What happens at my property may not happen at your property, and therefore we need to understand what's going on with those fluxes. However, they also fluctuate from year to year as well. Therefore, these fluxes that are being emitted from the ground will actually enter the atmosphere, and hopefully they don't impact global warming, but we both know the truth. Therefore, the mapping of these fluxes and gases is essential to help us possibly develop reduction strategies, not only for today, but for the future or our children. Our objectives were basically twofold. First, we wanted to assess the spatial distribution over both time and space for both gases and soil thermal properties. Second, we wanted to see if there was any relationships that may exist between these soil thermal properties and these gases from the secondary forest in central Missouri. The study site was chosen at Lincoln University's Busby Farm, which is approximately 15 minutes from downtown Jefferson City, Missouri. The experiment site is occupied by secondary forest, which is principally an oak and hickory stand with various understory species at present. Our soils for this experiment site was a Gatewood Moki silty loam, which is an oxalic habitat. Soil thermal properties were measured during sampling using a KD2, including a KD2 Pro Theta probes. All chambers in the area of the perimeter was mapped using a GeoExplorer Pathfinder 3. This is the actual site taken as of this year. This picture is courtesy of Google Earth. It basically gives the outer perimeter of the study sampling site. Plus, it shows that there are some housing develops, but most notably, right up here, we have a composting study that's being conducted there at Lincoln University as well. Here's the chamber locations with the outer perimeter again being mapped using a GeoExplorer Pathfinder 3. During 2003, Lincoln University and our study, we permanently installed 20 chambers which were made out of PVC pipe. Each chamber had two holes on either side of it, including the lids actually had two stopper holes as well. During sampling periods, we would put a vacuum pressure grease on the inside of the seal of the lid and then seal all chambers using stoppers. These stoppers would be placed for 30 minutes to allow the soil gases to build up inside the chamber. During that time, we used our KD2 Pro to get the analysis of soil thermal properties. In this case, we're looking at conductivity, resistivity, diffusivity, soil temperature. We used a petrometer and checked out the hardness of the soil at the time of sampling. We measured the moisture at time of sampling, and we also looked at specific heat. Once this was accomplished, we moved to the Dickerson Research Center, located on the main campus of Lincoln University, and all sample gases were ran through the Shimatsu GC14, which was set up specifically for the measuring of these gases. Once the computer was done chewing on that information, spit out the numbers that we needed, we moved right into the flux calculation. We used the flux calculation according to Hugh et al. In 2001, simply stating that flux is the density of a gas, which is multiplied by the volume of the chamber divided by the area, multiplied by the change in the concentration inside of the chamber of the gas. That's important. As well as the change of time multiplied by Kelvin divided by temperature of the time of sampling. And then we actually had three different transfer coefficient variables which needed to be factored in. During the experiment year 2006-2007, we looked at the climatic conditions. In 2006, most notably in the month of July up here, if I can find it, here we go, we showed a 33 degrees Celsius for the hottest part of the sampling period, with October again showing that it's the lowest time. In 2007, August ended up being the hottest month of record, and then once again October showing there as the coolest part. Precipitation during 2006-2007 2006, we're looking at 0.3 centimeters of, in August. In 2007, we show 0.4 centimeters of moisture received during the sampling period. For those of us that are in the Midwest, we pretty much know that we've been in a drought for the last 5 years at least. This may actually count towards number six. Soil chemical properties, basically, we ran an analysis on all the soil samples from each chamber, and then we actually used the averages. We're looking at a slightly acidic soil at the pH of 5.6, and our total nitrogen was 12.49. Interesting, we only had 5.35% of organic matter. However, when we look at the physical properties, one might notice that the air-filled porosity mean was 0.65. That's telling you we got a dry soil out there, which once again was related to the drought that we've experienced. Our bulk density was 0.75. We show that we have pretty much a large content of organic matter out there falling down from the leaf litter. Statistical and geostatistical analysis. First, we would run the statistics program for the summary of our data. Then we'd move to the GS Plus program for variogram modeling. And then we would move, if things responded to a model then, we would move into the ArcGIS for interpolation and for the designing of the maps. First, our statistics program, we looked at the mean distributions for 2006-2007 data for all three gases. 2006 was 5.3 and 11.5 in 2007. But most notably, we show that there is a 6.2 micrograms of nitrogen being emitted from nitrous oxide. We move to carbon dioxide, we see an increase of 11.29, and then methane shows a negative 7.006. Although it's negative, just remember that's just a sink. So we're storing the methane within the soil itself. Variogram modeling was the next step, and in terms of this presentation, we had to remove a lot of the data for this, but basically we wanted to see which gases and soil thermal properties responded to a specific model. If it responded to a specific model, then we were able to move on to the next step, which would be using the GIS software in order to find out where these fluxes were being emitted from. And basically, we're looking at a variance of distance as data as a function of distance. As I said, we wanted to see what our next step was after it fitted a model. We moved into the annual fluxes of gases for 2006-2007. This is basically reaffirming what our statistics program showed us. We see that carbon dioxide in 2006 was basically, we had ranges from 0.44 to 0.9, and in 2007 it would go from 0.57 all the way up to 120s. So we do show that there is emissions taking place. However, it's kind of optically delusional because you would think that you should be following the color pattern from 2006. It should be the same for 2007. But most notably, you need to pay attention to that these values on the other side have actually increased. If we want to look at optics, nitrous oxide, well, we can see that up here in the northern section, up in chamber 7 area, was pretty much our hot spot. However, in 2007, we show that that area has actually increased. So now we're having more emissions taking place over more chambers. Methane, down here in 2006, we had our hottest points are up here, and then we start to show that it did decrease. If we remember back to our statistics program where I just got done showing you the mean distributions of all three gases, we did show that methane had actually decreased down to a negative 7. And this is basically showing that it did. Soil thermal properties, we measured and mapped the same thing. We wanted to know what was going on. For those of you that are not familiar with these three properties, conductivity expressed a high and a lot of high values are associated with it, but R is the reciprocal of conductivity. Conductivity is the ability to, to transfer heat throughout the soil profile. Now we're looking at resistivity, which is the complete reciprocal. How well does it resist this? In 2006 to 2007, we showed that conductivity is actually decreased a little bit, but then in turn, but resistivity should have increased, and it did. Soil temperature pretty much has changed from 2006 to 2007, although statistically, when you're looking at it, you're looking at 21 to 20 degrees Celsius. In 2007, we ranged from anywhere from 4.3 all the way up to 25. Between the 2 years when we ran our data, we found out that there was actually an increase of almost 3 degrees Celsius that is attributed to the study site. One of our relationships we wanted to look at, do carbon dioxide, methane, and nitrous oxide have any relationships between these soil thermal properties? Now, these were based on an entire sampling period for 2006. 2006, we showed that carbon dioxide did correlate, linearly correlate with temperature, conductivity, and resistivity based on our p-values of 0.0029, 0.01, and negative 0.009. Methane only linear correlated with R and D, and nitrous oxide only with T and K. However, we see a complete change going on in 2007. The between gases, we do so show that some of the correlations do exist. However, carbon dioxide only linear correlated with temperature. Methane shows no correlation whatsoever taking place, and nitrous oxide only this year responded to specific heat. Now, again, keep in mind that this is based on an entire sampling period. However, what happens when we look at the individual breakdown, month to month, sampling period, and then year to year? We do show that there are other relationships taking place and other soil thermal properties are being responsible for the emission of greenhouse gases. Here in June 2006, we show that K, R, and T were primarily responsible for the emissions. In 2007, K and T. However, if we go back to the entire sampling period of 2007, it doesn't show that K responded to anything, if you remember back to the last slide, I was just at. However, one of the most notable things that we looked at is that T is actually expressed both positively and negatively. We need to find out exactly what's taking place out there that it would give us that response. However, then when we look at conductivity, any time that conductivity is expressed, it's always being expressed as a positive value. Well, temperature continues to be the major controlling factor. There's been a lot of research that's out there that's explaining the same thing that we have basically showed here. However, when you look at it from a year to year versus a sampling to sampling, you see that temperature doesn't necessarily always control those things. However, when you put everything together, you will see temperature being the most dominant factor. When we look at the individual factors such as resistivity, conductivity, and specific heat, they still, release or play controlling factors on the emission of greenhouse gases. And as I said earlier, that soil conductivity is expressed always as a positive value. Well, the data from 2006 shows that nitrous oxide emissions did shift from northeastern section, and that the emissions actually had risen by 6 point something micrograms per minute. But anyways, methane actually decreased. Well, according to Goldman and all others in 1995, anytime you add nitrogen of any sort, whether it's man-made or if it happens naturally, you're going to see a consumption of methane decreasing. And this does take place over temperate forests, prairies, as well as other agricultural soils. This is suggesting that methane consumptions are directly associated with high available nitrogen. And again, this is just basically the same, what I've just shown you on a visual. Here we show the emissions of nitrous oxide becoming higher. We actually do show that there are some here in 2006, except now we're looking at an overall area increasing. Well, if this is increased, we should see a decrease in methane, and that we did show that. We actually dropped down to a negative 7.00. So here we're looking at all of our hotspots, and then as a whole, everything seems to be decreasing. Well, with that, I would like to take this moment to thank Lincoln University, like to thank Dr. Frito Avazi, Dr. Salambi Congolo, Lincoln University Dean of Agriculture, Dr. Stephen Meredith, and that this work was actually funded by money donated by USDA. And thank you. And at this time, I'd like to entertain any questions.
Okay.
In terms of the actual moisture content between 2006 and 2007, during 2006 we didn't actually measure any of the moisture content because there was another person that's actually doing that relationship. He's actually present here today. So my direct relationship towards moisture, it was only based on that information that we pulled up during 2007's data. There, when you're looking at the total moisture for the area, there wasn't a lot, you know, for all the sampling periods. I'd actually have to refer to another student here to show what that moisture content actually was. That's not fair. No.
Or you can wait.
No, go ahead. Go ahead. Go ahead.
You showed some gaseous fluxes, and you showed soil thermal properties, and you mentioned that, you know, in your correlation analysis that the soil thermal properties were responsible on some level for the gas fluxes. I don't understand the mechanism that links soil thermal properties to gas fluxes. Could you explain that mechanism?
I shall try. Okay, when we're looking at the soil thermal properties and whether or not they can contribute to the emission of greenhouse gases, I think what we're looking for is that how well is the soil is going to promote, let's say, the microbial population, where we're talking about the roots of a system, of the tree systems that are out there, how all that is going to affect, and as a whole, how that's all going to affect the emissions of the greenhouse gases. Well, the microbial populations, you know, like we were just talking about the available nitrogen, if there's an increase in available nitrogen, then the methyl autotrophs would then consume the nitrogen as opposed to the methane. So we're looking at not only, I've only looked at the physical portion of it. I would say that my other esteemed colleagues that are sitting in here that are looking at that would basically, you know, have a better understanding of how those two things play hand in hand to either increase or decrease the emissions of gases. I probably didn't get to you because you're still looking a little confused.
I think it's really indirect. It's not a direct kind of mechanism. And in a lot of ways, the soil thermal properties are related to the water content of the soil. So maybe, you know, coming back toward that temperature and water content.
Okay. Yeah, and like I said, there is another student that's present here today that's, I don't know if he's actually presenting today, but I believe he has work downstairs in the poster labs that shows a lot of that moisture and other nitrogens, nitrous, I think you're doing nitrogen, is that correct? Yeah. Other soil properties that would affect the emissions of greenhouse gases. So.